This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour with Pastor David M. Atkinson. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and request that you pray for this ministry. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Now here is Pastor Atkinson.
In the 1970s, a phrase from Scripture seemed to leap off the page at me. The verse was Exodus 27, verse 20. Thou shalt command the children of Israel that they bring the pure oil olive beaten for the light. Command that they bring the pure oil olive beaten for the light to cause the lamp to burn always. That verse of Scripture gave rise to this poem called Beaten But Burning. Beaten But Burning. Let me be beaten. If beaten, I burn. Let me be spanked. If spanked, I learn. Let me be crushed. If crushed, I yearn to bring healing to others and compassionate head to turn out where there's hurt and bruises and pain, out to a weeping widow of Nain, out to the highway, the hedge, and the lane to bring loving to others who've sought for a Gilead in vain. Let me be broken. If broken, I'll care. Let me be dying. If dying, I'll bear the message of life to someone, somewhere, straining, groping for grace. Oh, beat till I'm fluid and there. Beat till I'm lost in running His race. Beat till His image is stamped in my place. Beat till I flow in sovereignty's vase to bring Jesus to others. Oh, beat till I mirror His face. Beaten but burning. Now let's take our Bibles and turn to Acts 27. Acts 27. We'll begin with our text for this series and then a brief review. Our text is Acts chapter 27, verse 7a. Would you read in verse 7 with me to the first comma? Acts 27, 7a. We'll read to the first comma together. And when we had sailed slowly many days. All right, now let's slow down the adverb this time. All right, just slow it down. Together, please. And when we had sailed slowly many days. Now, you did a great job. I think I'll just stay around here and keep you all here, and you will give expression to the things I want to preach, and we'll just make a great team. We're looking together at the slow sailing syndrome. We start by looking at the characteristics of the slow sailing syndrome. How do you know when you're in a time of slow sailing? Well, first of all, we saw in Acts 27, 1b, that when you're in a time of slow sailing, you seem to be a prisoner of your circumstances. And then we noted Acts 27, 4, see, the winds were contrary. We saw secondly that when you're in a time of slow sailing, circumstances seem to oppose you and fight you. Circumstances, one after the other, seem to oppose you and fight you. Then we move to verse 7b. The text says, we scarce were come over against Aridus. The third characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is that progress seems virtually immeasurable or totally lacking. Progress seems so minuscule, it's virtually immeasurable or perhaps completely lacking. And then, verse 7c, the wind not suffering us or permitting us, you're blocked or kept from legitimate goals or a previously successful course of action. The wind not suffering us or allowing us, you're blocked from legitimate goals or a previously successful course of action. And then verse 9a. Now when much time was spent, number 5, the time of your life, and life is time, is it not? When time is over, life is over. So the time of your life is consumed in apparently fruitless, wasted effort. Much time was spent. The time of your life is consumed in apparently fruitless, wasted effort. Then verse 9b, and when sailing was now dangerous, the sixth characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is that you sense danger. And the time is even longer because you sense danger. And it seems like forever because you sense danger. And then the final characteristic that we saw in the message last evening was there in verse 9c. Because the fast, or the Day of Atonement, was now already past. We saw that the seventh characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is that an occasion that should be an occasion for commemoration, spiritual commemoration or spiritual inspiration, merely becomes another day on the calendar. And times that used to be spiritually meaningful to you, times that used to be spiritually uplifting for you, now pass like just another day on the calendar. And all of life seems mundane. There are no tender and precious days with the Lord. Well, let's move on this morning and see more characteristics of the slow sailing syndrome. I'll start to read at verse 9. Acts 27, 9. Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion, who had been kind to Paul, believe the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenice, and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and the northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose or favorable conditions for sailing, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euryclidon. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island, which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksands, strake sail, and so were driven. And we, being exceedingly tossed with the tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. We'll stop our reading for this morning at that point. We're going to look then at more characteristics of the slow sailing syndrome. Look back at verses 10 and 11. Indeed, look at the end of verse 9. Paul admonished them and said unto them, "Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless," the centurion believed someone else. Nevertheless, it's a word of contrast. The centurion believed the master and owner of the ship. Here's the eighth characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome. You'll be inclined to think that you're caught in the slow sailing syndrome when your counsel or your advice is rejected or ignored. I don't suppose that's ever happened to you. I suppose that you're different than I am. I suppose that every time in all these years that you've given someone advice, they've always taken it, right? And you're laughing. Now, life begins to feel slow when people won't listen to your counsel, when they ignore your advice. The tedium or the monotony of keeping quiet, when you know that you've got good advice to give, is a very frustrating thing. I repeat, the tedium of keeping quiet when you know you've got helpful advice to give is a frustrating thing, and it makes the day or the week or the month seem even longer and even slower. They just won't listen to me. They think I have nothing to contribute in this crisis. It makes life slow. But Paul did not keep quiet indefinitely. He spoke up. And after he spoke up, his counsel was promptly and unceremoniously rejected. Paul was neither the first nor the last to have his advice ignored. Joshua and Caleb had their counsel ignored. Do you remember the 12 spies were sent out to spy out the promised land, Canaan? The 12 came back. Joshua and Caleb had a good report. They gave positive counsel. They gave optimistic advice. Said, with the help of God, we can take our promised land. And the other 10 advised a contrary plan. No, we can't do it. There are giants in the land. And the counsel and advice of Joshua and Caleb were promptly ignored and rejected. And for 40 years, Joshua and Caleb had to put up with the penalty brought upon the larger group because of the bad advice of the 10. Life does begin to feel slow when we have those times when, you know, that 12-year-old doesn't listen to us anymore like he did when he was 6. Or that 13-year-old granddaughter is not quite so sure that grandpa's right all the time. Life gets slow when our counsel is ignored. And we know we've got something to contribute to the situation, but no one's listening. The tedium or the monotony of holding back and being forced to shut up while those you advise pursue an unwise course, it seems to just make life slow down. Let's go on. Look at verse 12b. 12b. The more part, that simply means the majority, advised to depart. Paul said, no, no. If we leave harbor, there's going to be much damage to the ship. Our own lives will be jeopardized. But the more part, the majority said, oh no, Paul. Not only are we not going to listen to your advice, we've got contrary opinion, and we need to pull up anchor and move out. The ninth characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is that you find yourself in the minority. You find yourself in the minority, and you have to experience the rejection and loneliness that often comes to those who hold a minority opinion. It seems like we conservatives are increasingly in a minority in this land that we love, does it not? Oh my. Even listen to what is supposed to be a conservative cable network, and I know they have to do it. They have to do it to tip their hat to the politically correct rule of equal time and fairness. But you get some that you think are conservatives, and the more they talk, the more you find out they really are moderates. They really are moderates, and you really can't count on them to be consistent conservatives. And so increasingly, we find ourselves in this nation that we love in the minority. And we have doubt that we will ever again form a majority opinion in the United States of America. And so life has slowed down for us. We no longer have in the White House a Ronald Reagan. And I know he was you. And I know he wasn't perfect. But oh my soul, he was old school. And he had a sense of dignity. He had a sense of dignity with respect to the Oval Office. And we weren't ashamed. Now they have all these rap and rock parties in the White House, and worse than that, with former President Clinton. And life has slowed down for conservatives. Things are not just popping along for us because we find ourselves in the minority, and we look for hope, but we're not sure that our counsel and our advice will ever be heeded again. Life gets slow when you find yourself in the minority. Let's continue. Look at verse 16b. 16b. There we read, as part of his nautical seafaring logbook type record, inspired record, we read in 16b, we had much work to come by the boat. Now, I hope that when I read that earlier, you were scratching your head. What could that mean? Because they were in a ship. They were in the ship. And now we read, we had much work to come by the boat. Well, the key to understanding this is to understand that the language being used here in the precious authorized translation, the language indicates a difference between a ship and a boat. They had much work to come by the boat. A.T. Robertson, the Greek scholar, and Charles Ryrie tell us that the crew of the larger ship had put out a smaller boat. And a smaller boat was like a dugout. It was like a dugout or a dinghy. Are you familiar with that term? A dinghy? Just a smaller boat. And the crew had put out the smaller boat or the dinghy so that it could secure the ship. Probably it was to carry the anchor to the other side of a sandbar or to a location a little bit away from the larger ship. But they had much work to get the dinghy back. They sent the dinghy out probably to anchor the larger ship that they were in, and it was even a struggle to get the little boat, the little dinghy back. You know you're in the slow sailing syndrome when even the little things are hard. Years ago, I wrote a poem called "Your High Priest Knows." It was a poem, of course, about Jesus and his high priestly ministry. And one of the lines of that poem reads, "He knows, your high priest knows, when small things are just too much." I'm finding buttons. And you may think, well, you're still wet behind the ears. You're still a spring chicken compared to me. And stop your complaining. And perhaps I should, but buttons are getting harder. And I think what I need is a jar of Australian Dream Cream. They say it works wonders for arthritis pain and the joints. And when I was young, I could do shirt buttons just like that. Not anymore. It takes me longer to button up a dress shirt. And I spend most of my life in dress shirts. And the little thing of buttoning up these dingy buttons now takes longer. Takes longer. You know you're in the slow sailing syndrome when the little things require more effort, much work. And does it take more effort to walk across a room than it used to? Some of you are probably deacons in a church. Is the enemy attacking your church and it takes longer to have a deacon's meeting than it used to take because it's a time of contrary opinion and the enemy's working to try to divide? Perhaps it's so with your staff in your place of business where what used to be a little boat, a little dinghy, now takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, just to do something little. And sometimes we can't even give our attention to the big ship because it's work just to deal with the little dinghy. That often happens in churches. And would to God, and I'm a committed conservative, I'm a biblicist, and I believe in holiness, and I pursue holiness. But sometimes I think that our churches and our ministries get all caught up with the little boats and the little dinghies, and we forget what we're all about, and the ship, and getting where we really need to go gets ignored because we're just all fixated with the dinghy. And the meetings, the board meetings and the deacons meetings and the staff meetings can go on and on and on while we dinghy around. We just dinghy around, and it takes much effort just to get the dinghy back on board the ship. And we spend all that time, which we would have been better to spend on the ship, just trying to get the little dinghy back. And perhaps in our marriages, we experience slow sailing because we start to fuss and fret about little dinghies instead of just keeping our attention on the ship and the cause. Sometimes we fuss and fume about little things that do not mean beans. In the long range, and we slow down, and we come to a halt because we're just all fixated with the little dinghy. And so everything slows down, and we can't get on with it. And we have to acknowledge it's a time of slow sailing. May God help us. May God help me as a biblicist, as a committed conservative. May God help me to know what the big things are, the important things are, and what the little dinghies are. And to divide my time and my attention accordingly. One of our deacons said a few months ago, he had told another man who was considering a nomination for deacon, he said, "Oh," he said, "it'll be all right here." He said, it'll be all right to become a deacon here. He said, the meetings don't go on till midnight. He said, we have an agenda. We stick to the agenda. And we don't allow ourselves to go on rabbit trails. And you'll enjoy being a deacon here. He said, and I know this is a comparison, but it is life and it is truth. He said, at the last church where I served, we went in circles till midnight. He said, we just went in circles till midnight in most deacons' meetings. Long, unfulfilling meetings. No resolution. No decision making. Like puppies chasing our tails. We know we're in the slow sailing syndrome when it's hard work just to try to get the dinghy, the little boat, back on board. Let's remember that we need to give attention to the little dinghy, but not allow it to deter us from the cause of the big ship. Now, you may think this morning, to put this in balance, you may think that your ministry, what you're called to, is a little dinghy ministry. But remember that if it needs to be done, if it's a detail that needs to be attended to, it's not little in the eyes of God. Just take care of what some might think is your little ministry as part of the larger cause. Ushering is not a little thing in the eyes of God. Working in the nursery is not a little thing in the eyes of God. Being a church secretary is not a little thing in the eyes of God. Picking up trash on the property is not a little thing in the eyes of God. And so the balance of this whole thing is, if my task at the moment is to take care of the little dinghy, I do it. I do it as efficiently as I can because it's part of a larger cause. I like the old gospel song that says, in the harvest field now ripened, there's a work for all to do. Hark, listen, the voice of God is calling to the harvest, calling you. Little is much when God is in it. Labor not for wealth or fame, there's a crown. And you can win it if you go in Jesus' name. Does the place you're called to labor seem so small? A little dinghy. And so little known. It is great if God is in it. And he'll not forget his own. Little is much when God is in it. So we need to learn the balance of taking care of the little dinghies. But not losing sight of the bigger ship. And we seem to be in the slow sailing syndrome when it takes increased effort to take care of the little dinghy. Let's go on. Acts 27:17c. The record says they were fearing, 17c, they were fearing lest they should fall into the quicksands. I did some research on this term, quicksands. And the term quicksands may also be understood to include an area of shallow water. The area of quicksand can also be understood to include an area of shallows or shallow water. Number 11, you know you're in the slow sailing syndrome when you seem to be stuck near shallow water. You're stuck in the shallows. And the shallows threaten to bog you down. Your voyage seems just on the surface. Or, to put it another way, your journey just seems superficial. There's no depth. No depth to your spiritual life anymore. I was thrilled to hear you reporting on your own personal God and I time this morning. And those who gave testimony about today's God and I time spoke in such a way that there was some depth to the reports about your time of personal devotions this morning. We need to have a close walk with God. Years ago, and I know there can be controversy over terms, but years ago, many people felt that there was a place for a deeper walk with God. And years ago, people were not ashamed to say, you know, I don't want to live in the shallows spiritually. I want to walk in a deeper walk with God. And the hymn writer said, oh, for a closer walk with God. Oh, for a closer walk with God. And he talked about all the things that a closer walk with God will do in our lives for our own good and for the glory of God. But you know, you're in a time of slow sailing when you're just bogged down in the quicksand or the shallows. You're not learning anything new. You're caught up exclusively with the little dinghies. And different advice and contrary opinions. And you're just caught up in the shallows. And your spiritual life slows down. Because you're not taking the time for your devotions, or to get out a commentary, or to even think about one verse. You're just stuck in the shallows. And so you don't have anything new to contribute to your Sunday school class. You don't have anything new to contribute at the ladies' Bible study. Because you're stuck in the spiritual quicksand. You're stuck in the spiritual shallows. You're not walking in a deeper walk with God. Now, let me qualify this. We all know that we do not pin our final hopes on experiences. We are Bible-based, doctrine-based people. We're not charismatics. We're not faith healers occupationally. We believe that God can heal, but we're not faith healers occupationally. And so we don't pin our hopes on experience. Experiences can be deceiving. However, may I say to you, as humbly as I know how to say it, that the Wesley brothers and George Whitefield and women like Lady Huntington, also known as Countess Selina, they had something in their deeper walks with God. Do you take time to think about the phrases in Charles Wesley's hymns? Do you take time to consider how closely they walked with God? we should not base our hopes on experiences. But God does want us to have those times with Him when we are like John Wesley. These were his words. When we're like John Wesley, strangely warmed. Have you been strangely warmed in your walk with God lately? Have you had a tender time with the Lord lately? Or are you just fearing the quicksands and just stuck in the shallows? I've appreciated so many things about Dr. Charlie Hatchett over the years. And one of the things I like about Dr. Charlie Hatchett is that from time to time he reads the Puritans. And the Puritans force us to think. I do not always agree with Puritan doctrine. They tend to be five-point Calvinists. But I don't have to become a five-point Calvinist to know something rich when I read it. And I need to be reading the deep things of God. American culture is becoming increasingly shallow. And you get all these banalities. And you see the president jiving with these precious but empty lives from Hollywood. And their lives are paper thin. And it's because they don't know the Lord. And so the sports culture, the entertainment culture, is becoming just so shallow. We need to be stretching our minds and stretching our hearts by reading books that force us to think. We know we're in the slow sailing syndrome spiritually when we're just bogging down in the quicksands and the shallows. And we're no deeper than we were 20 years ago. I do like testimony time. But one thing that I recoil from in testimony time is when certain individuals can only talk about something that took place 30 years ago. They have nothing to say about what's going on in their life right now with the Lord. They think they arrived when they got saved 30 years ago, and that's all they have to say. And it becomes plain when you listen to them over the years that they're not growing in the Lord because they're not reading the Bible. They're not praying. They're just stuck in the quicksands. They're stuck in the shallows. And so the growth rate of their spiritual life is very, very slow, if there's any growth. Then note Verse 17d, the record says, and so were driven. This brings us to the 12th characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome, and we're almost finished for this session. And so were driven. You know that you're in the slow sailing syndrome, number 12, when in spite of your best effort, you lose control of your own situation and your own destiny under God. Of course, we know He is sovereign and He's always in control. But we like to have what we think is a certain measure of self-determination that we can make some choices for our life and our ministry. But you know that you're no in slow sailing when you're driven by outside forces. You're driven by outside forces beyond your control, and it gets out of hand. It gets out of your hands, and there's not a thing you can do except pray and wait. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been in a place where they were the decisions of others around you that boxed you into a corner? And the best you could do was make the best of a bad situation. You're driven by circumstances and events that a sovereign God permitted. And you ask why? Because you're no longer able to chart what would be your course or your timing. If you could, you're driven by external factors and circumstances. Oh, those days get long. And Brother Scott was talking earlier about how long the nights can be when we're awakened and can't get back to sleep. We're driven, tossing and turning on the bed. We're driven by events. In their case, it's the very, very sad reality that they have two children with diabetes. Three. They're driven by that factor. Do you think that when Scott and his bride said, "I do, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health," do you think in their wildest imagination they ever expected that they would be parenting three children with diabetes? I don't. But now reality is that his schedule at night and throughout the day is driven by this factor. It's an external factor that schedules their lives and has changed their lives. They don't complain. But I have to imagine that some nights seem awfully slow. They don't complain, but I have to imagine that some days seem awfully slow and awfully long. You lose control of your own preferences. Now, it's bad enough to feel that you're a prisoner of your circumstances, as we saw in the first characteristic. Bad enough to feel like you're a prisoner of your circumstances. It's even more frustrating when you begin to feel like circumstances are driving you. It's one thing to be a prisoner, is another thing to be driven. And when storms come, they drive us. The circumstances seem to walk over and take the ship's wheel. And we're driven. We're driven by causes and factors beyond our own control. Factors and causes that would not have been our druther. Not something we would have chosen, but we're driven. And life can seem so very, very slow. Notice verse 28. "And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared..." The 13th characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is there's no light, no light or direction. You find yourself in a blackout. There aren't even any stars to give a little bit of light. You're in a blackout. you know you're in a time of slow sailing when there's no light. It's just darkness. I remember a particular time in our family, in our ministry. It was a period of blackness and slow creeping darkness, and there were no stars. It wasn't just that there wasn't a moon. For several months, there weren't even any stars. Our family needed light. Jane had gotten infectious hepatitis. And 2 weeks after Jane turned yellow with jaundice, I started to turn yellow with jaundice. And we tried to carry on. After about 6 weeks out of the pulpit, I went back into the pulpit. It was a young church. A growing church, but young, growing churches always have problems. And I thought I needed to get back in the pulpit to try to give some guidance to a young, growing, but certainly not immune from problems church. Went back to the pulpit too early, got sicker and sicker and sicker, and then finally, a year after the diagnosis, was seeing spots as I would hold onto the pulpit to steady myself. I'd look out at the people and I'd see spots like flash bulbs going off. But I wasn't getting any better. The load was too heavy. I was tired. Jane was exhausted, so we resigned. And we steered into the darkest period of our lives. We moved to a small city that had a Christian school because we wanted to keep April in a Christian school. And we waited. What does a sick Baptist pastor do? Churches don't want sick pastors. And so some churches wouldn't have even had Paul. He had a thorn in the flesh, you know. Most Baptist churches want macho. They want men who have the bodies of 24-year-olds and the brains of 75-year-olds. True? That's what the pulpit committee goes looking for. Men with the bodies of 24-year-olds and the brains of 65-year-olds. Nobody wants a sick 28-year-old Baptist pastor. Those were black days. And April, little tiny April, would come home from school. Any word yet today, Dad? Any word yet today? Any telephone calls today, Dad? Are we moving? Do you have a place to go to? No, honey. No, honey. Nothing today. We were in a blackout. No stars even. Certainly no moon or sun. Then the last characteristic of the slow sailing syndrome is verse 20c. All hope that we should be saved was then taken away. Hope dies. Hope dies. You know you're in the slow sailing syndrome when hope dies. Proverbs 13:12 says, "Hope deferred maketh the heart sick." Hope deferred or put off, hope not realized, makes the heart sick. You know you're in the slow sailing syndrome when hope is about gone. Well, it's my prayer that if nothing else, our sharing our mutual experiences these days will help us to know we're not alone. There is no temptation taking you but what is common to man. And but what the Lord will, with the temptation, make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. So it is my desire that these times spent together will help us understand we're not alone. And we've all had times of slow sailing.
We trust you have been encouraged or strengthened by the word today. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at graceglory7@juno.com. That's graceglory7@juno.com. We will reply to all those who contact us. And now, until next time, may the good Lord bless and keep you.